Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And what's it going to take, folks? I mean, so we kind of closed on this argument that the convention, as those anti-conventionites have been telling you, it's a runaway convention. Well, that's not true at all. It wasn't a runaway. As a matter of fact, everything we see in the amendments that they were trying to get into the Articles of Confederation went into the Constitution. Almost all of the things that they wanted. There were some things that they didn't get, and that we kind of pointed out, that they didn't get the level of control in regulating commerce. States weren't going to give that up. And these delegates knew that the states didn't want to give that up, that it was just a, I guess, a pie in the sky kind of wish that, you know, the Continental Congress threw that little, that big coin into the well, hoping that it would bear some fruit. And they didn't get their wish granted. But more importantly, what we want to help you understand is that even though the runaway convention is a misnomer, it's just bad intelligence, the fact of the matter is that the convention of state folks are asking you to give them a blank check. The men back in those days, James Madison, in calling for the Constitutional Convention, was a good, righteous man. He realized that the Articles of Confederation were going to basically allow the United States, or this experiment in this new union, to be wiped out. They were inept. They were impotent. They needed more energy. They needed more power, and they needed to make some significant changes. And nobody can deny what they got, what they received was, and as a matter of fact, I even hear this from John Birchers. No one will tell you that the Constitution is illegitimate. But when they tell you that it is a runaway convention, that's the same thing. That's tantamount to saying that they were out of their scope. They had no legitimacy in doing what they did. So they're crossing the line and they're sullying the Constitution. How dare they? How dare they sully the good names of these men that went into that convention and did everything they could, regardless of the hyperbole, regardless of the aftermath of these men who may have felt that, oh, you know what, maybe we did exceed our scope. You know, in private conversations, however that happened, it doesn't matter. When these issues came up at the ratification debates, they actually, before they even debated the Constitution, before they even started recording the testimony, they held a vote to determine whether they felt that the men, based on the commission that they were given by the state, did these men violate that when they're looking at this Constitution and looking at the commission? And we went through all of this. And the reason why nobody voted they won in every case, that's why they ended up debating. In other words, the democracy, when they were looking objectively at the commission and determining whether these men had actually violated that, they settled this question. No, they didn't exceed their commission. There was plenty of latitude in those commissions to do what was necessary in amending the Constitution for the Union, to stabilize and preserve the Union. That was their charge. And boy, you know, I just can't tell you how frustrated I get when they try to talk out of both sides of their mouth. I mean, have you ever dealt with people that do that? Out of one side of the mouth, they say, this is a terrible thing. And on the other side, but it's definitely a divine gift from it is something that was inspired by the divine hand of providence. What? Anyway, back to the Convention of States. the Convention of States is nowhere close to even saying that the Constitution is the problem. We do not need an amendment to solve what they're trying to get in, get their arms around. They're telling you that the convention is the mechanism for getting compliance to the Constitution. Folks, I already told you that the 10th Amendment is clear. Things not delegated, things that are not granted to the federal government in that Constitution, nor prohibited by the states, are left to the states. So, and I'm paraphrasing because I'm not reading that exactly word for word, but the point is, folks, that it says right there that the federal government can't do anything that's not delegated. And they're saying, oh, well, look at all this overreach. You know, we need an amendment to deal with it. The 10th Amendment already does deal with that. Are you kidding me? What, are you going to change the 10th Amendment to say, well, there's no words. There's no words for the lunacy that they are actually trying to assert. And the fact is, this just in, folks, and I'm hoping that I can get some people that actually are engaged in supporting, you know, this anti-convention, you know, side. I'm hoping that people can actually try to back out a little bit and be objective and stop listening to who you think are the subject matter experts, because the subject matter experts have basically created a false lie. They've created a lie that is basically telling you that that was a runaway convention. That is a lie. We academically prove that's a lie. So, and here's the irony. You can't, they tell you you can't trust an organization that lies. We're going to actually start doing, and I'm going to develop this, and it's coming up in the next month or so, because I've just got so much on my plate. But we're going to create a website, or not a website, but we're going to create on our website a dividers page and a uniters page. Any organization that is willing to pick up the petitions that we have and ask the people to start supporting these petitions and getting your local county legislators, your county commissioners, your county supervisors, whatever you call your legislators for the county, start driving these petitions and start waking up your county. This is how we have to do this. This is the Martin Luther 95 thesis. This is the movement that must happen. There's no other way around this. And I'm not being an oracle. I'm just being pragmatic. I'm not the guy that was chosen, or I don't even have that illusion. I'm the guy that most people are ignoring that's absolutely right. I'm just right about this. It's not my idea. This is what was done by James Madison and Thomas Jefferson, and it's basically what's in the Constitution. This is what frustrates most people, especially most people that deal with me, because they don't want to deal with me because they have to make money. They have to support their organization or they lose their funding. They have to support this very thing and they can't get involved with what we're doing, which is why we're going to start exposing the dividers. They're called dividers. There are uniters. There are people that are willing to set aside, you know, what they're doing and unite with others in assisting the recovery and the reclamation of this republic. Reclaiming the Republic is not an organization. This is a principle. This is a thought. This is a movement. And when we get organizations that are supporting Reclaiming the Republic, that means that they're supporting Republic Review as the ultimate interposition with the federal government. But more importantly, they're supporting at the county level the taking back of your county government. It is interposition by we the people. You don't let these people say, I took an oath to support the Constitution, but I'm not held to that. You know, I've got these other statutes that tell me I don't have to do that. Well, then, did you actually take an oath to support the statutes of the state? No. You took an oath to support the constitutions, and you have to know and understand that many of these things that you're doing are not constitutional. Ah, and there it is. Because if they don't understand that, then they're basically not doing their job for you. So, folks, as I always say, I'm here to help, and I'm not from the government. Now, one of the things I need to really, I hope you're still listening. You need to understand, and I'm going to probably repeat this on Monday as a lead-in. You need to understand that in technology speak, there is a shift afront that is moving us technologically and moving you into the board, just like the vaccination is going to re-edit your DNA. You know, the jab, the COVID jab, and the mRNA. So any vaccination that is an mRNA, you need to make sure you don't take that. If there's that technology in the injection, anything that is going to edit your DNA, then there's my suggestion. I'm not a doctor, but you need to actually determine whether you trust a corporation to edit your DNA. That is something that was done by God, that has naturally been given to us as we've basically procreated and continued and preserved life on this earth. And it is being changed in our right in front of us. Now, I think that there's a lot of people that are going to die. And the design is, and the Bible tells us that a lot of people are going to die because we're just being coerced into this. And some of this crap sheds. There's, you know, they're saying there's some really good video out there, but you need to get into that. But I want to talk on the technical side. I don't want to dive into the biological, medicine, healthcare, health freedom. We already have a petition. Go read petition 9 if you're looking for medical freedom. But why would you just look for medical freedom? Why wouldn't you look for every violation of the Constitution? So go look at all of our petitions. But what you need to know is that hardware and software started implementing security procedures and security protocols. When the internet was created, it literally was the WWW. And no, not the World Wide Web. It was the wild, wild west of technology. And anybody and everybody, and I got hacked, and I was basically, several times, my wife and I'm sure you all got hit by tornadoes. You'd go to a site that you thought, okay, here's a legitimate site, go to the whitehouse.com. Next thing you know, you get a tornado because you go to whitehouse.com, and back in those days, even Norton couldn't protect you. The only thing you could do in the late 90s and early 2000s was you had to power off your computer. Well, they started implementing some security, and with that, they were able to actually use, and Norton got started to work good with, you know, the TPM 1. What is TPM? It's Trusted Platform Module. 1.0 is what basically, you know, was it, I believe it was developed, and it was first fielded in 2006. And I'm not going to get into I don't want people's eyes to glaze over. But this new level of security, because everybody said, hey, we need to have security. It always starts with this, you know, security thing, right? It's the same thing with protect us, protect us, protect us. So it started with this good intent. But I am telling you, the Trusted Platform Module 2.0 is not a good Trusted Platform Module. It is a Trusted Platform Module for the board. This is for Microsoft. By the way, Microsoft Windows 11 will not work on most everybody's old systems. You have to buy a new computer. Are you okay with buying a new computer just because you can be compliant with Windows? Windows is mandating that? Folks, I'm here to tell you, you're better off trying to migrate to Linux or getting off of Windows altogether. Because when Windows basically says you have to buy new platform, a new hardware to be supported by us, they don't deserve your support anymore. Actually, Apple, as another big, bad, big tech company, Apple, Google, Windows, Amazon, all of these big tech companies, they don't deserve your loyalty and support. If you're an Amazon subscriber, I highly recommend that you no longer maintain that. Don't maintain Amazon Prime. They're sucking you in. Everything you do with Amazon is being handed to the government. That was their model in the 1990s. They've been handing your information to the government for the longest time. That's the only reason why they were able to stay on the stock market, the New York Stock Exchange. Amazon was on the New York Stock Exchange for over 10 years, and they couldn't turn a profit. They should have been delisted by the standards of stable stock. How is it? Oh, well, because they were giving the government all your information, they couldn't get delisted. They needed to stay in business. And slowly but surely, now Amazon is this giant. Oh, boy, I wish I had stock in that, right? Well, what you're meaning is, boy, I wish I had stock in the devil, because the devil is going to grow and grow and gain more and more power. I mean, is, you know, just figure out if the devil had a stock in an IPO and you got in into that IPO, boy, just you would probably be the richest person in the world. But would you want that money? Seriously, think about it. Would you want to make money off of buying into and supporting that? Anyway, Windows 11 is spying on you, and there is hardware spying that there's nothing you can do about it. Now, there's people that are out there telling you that at the OS level, you know, you can actually stop some of this stuff, but that's why they went to 2.0. Windows 10, you could kind of shut that stuff off, but Windows 10 had some AI in it as well. I am telling you, Windows 11 is closer to having full view of what you're doing. Do you want big tech to do that? As a matter of fact, one of the things that we actually have to talk about, and I'm just going to marry this up real quick, because we need a petition to do this. And if you're a person that is absolutely, you know, against big tech and the direction we're going, then you need to understand that what big tech is doing is a violation of your rights. And every state in the union needs to stand up and create laws to protect you, because big tech should not have your information. And that information should not be transferred, nor should it be kept by big tech. Just remember, the Fourth Amendment says the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable search and seizure. Well, because big tech is doing it, it's okay? No. And as a matter of fact, the 14th Amendment basically states that no state shall make or enforce any law that abridges your privileges and immunities. So the states are absolutely obligated to protect you from big tech, because big tech is coming in and saying, hey, you can't do these things. We have these license agreements that you're signing, and we control you because you have given us this control. Folks, there is no way in this government, under this Constitution, can any contract get you to waive your rights as a citizen. The stupidest thing you can do is to actually surrender your citizenship, because then you have no rights. Now, right now, the citizen is, you know, our government looks at you as chattel. Unconstitutionally, they have no authority to look at you and to control you the way they're doing it. And the only way we can fight this and stop this is through interposition, and we have to do it at the county level, state level, so we can do republic review, which to me, just, it's so frustrating when I've dealt with the John Birch Society since 2016, I reached out and I dealt with leadership. You know, the Western regional leader, and I won't say his name. He doesn't work with the John Birch Society anymore. He's gone. He's retired. But my point is that I tried to get them to become the advocates for this. Why is it that they were hesitant? And why is it that they attack me today? Because Republic Review solves the problem. And if you are a controlled opposition, you will not get involved with the solution. You would rather tell people to do things like nullification. You know, you'd rather, you know, send people down these old paths of call your congressman, go out and vote for Republicans, vote for conservatives. Why is it that everybody's being misled? Why? Why? Folks, what's it going to take? what is it going to take? Do I love this country too much? Have I gotten to a point where I've let my biases of love for liberty actually go and become this mean spreader of hate? I'm telling you, folks, if you want to understand, if you want to stand the evil of intolerance, if you want to stand the evil of hate, continue going down the path of what these controlled oppositions want you to do. Because bottom line, they're misleading us. And when it comes down to it, when everything has been flushed and everything has been seized, go look at every time the victors of this, you know, I'll just say this takeover of government, the communist, you know, Bolshevik revolutions. Go look at what Hitler did. Go look at how the tyrants, when they took over, how many people, their own people, they killed because they were the threats. And many of us, there's no doubt in my mind, I know lots of people that would rather die than go across that line. Because going across that line is no longer just about, you know, anything, you know, about government or anything else. It is about accepting the mark. We're in the final revolution, and we have everything we need to stop it. And this is how important this show is. And there's no doubt in my mind, there's no entertainer out there that is, because it's not entertaining. Telling you the truth and being pragmatic and giving you the solution, that's not entertaining. You know, actually attacking Biden and saying really nice, pithy, you know, shoot, GR, he attacks good guys. People that we think were wearing white hats. You know, that's just powder on these black hats. That's all that is. Anyway. Let me get into what I was planning on. And I know many of you have tuned in to probably go down this path and follow this with us. So we have been covering how it takes two parties to actually move successfully in establishing and growing tyranny in America. In other words, it has taken both parties to cooperate and collude in moving us down this historical path. Where, I mean, we no longer have our government. Well, we still have our government. Our government has actually done things illegitimately, and they're now moving down a path where they're sealing the deal. We still have everything. You know, unfortunately, we've gone this far down the path. But there's no doubt in my mind that as long as we still have the Constitution, we still have state legislatures, we have what we need to be able to take this back. The states can actually sever and force the replacement of Congress. Remember, we actually control Congress at the states actually control them. They have the ability to recall all of these guys. And it's a matter of doing the one thing that no public servant wants to do because they're all corrupt. Nobody wants to enforce Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. I am absolutely dumbfounded that the Supreme Court is stumbling over what Section 3 of the 14th Amendment says. It is clear. No person, no senator, no judge, no representative. When you look at the 14th Amendment, the 14th Amendment, Section 3, does not go into what we would call, or what I would call, the president at all, the executive. It says, no person shall be a senator or a representative in Congress or elector of president. It doesn't say the president there. It never lists the president. The president had a unique process of holding the president accountable. And that was only to be by Congress. That's why Section 3 was to hold everybody else accountable. Everybody who was under the oath could now be held accountable to their oath of office by Section 3, except the president. And I can't believe the Supreme Court is stumbling on this. We'll be right back. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Oh, yeah. So I did tell you about Windows 11, and I did tell you that Windows 10 is ending support next year. In other words, their updates have pretty much stopped. Their last accumulative update just came out before the end of the year. And so, folks, I'm looking at, you know, we've only got just a little over a year before Windows 10 is no longer supported. And when Windows 10, now, one of the things I knew about Norton and some of these other antivirus companies out there, that they would continue protecting you beyond the life expectancy. In other words, when Windows stopped supporting Windows 7, you could still get, and I think still to this day, Norton still protects Windows 7. But there's no doubt in my mind, the big tech, and I think big tech is buying up or is controlling Norton as well, they're going to pull the plug. They're not going to run. In other words, you will not be able to renew a subscription for a Windows 7. I've not seen any official word. I'm just guessing because that's what they want. They want and need you to be into their network. They need to know what you're doing at all times. But see, they've made it really easy because most people use their phones. If you're simply using your phone, then they already know what you're doing. If you have accounts on your phone, you do purchases with your phone, you do your emails, I mean, you do everything on your phone, then you're already there. You're already there. And my advice is getting out of there. Change your phone to just a phone. Go back to your provider and say, how do I make this, back to the factory default so you expunge all of your apps that you have on there and get a hard computer, get a hard physical computer, and you're better off running Linux and then start running applications that either emulate Windows or what have you. I should not Windows, but the applications of Microsoft, the applications of Apple, because emulators will do that. These computers nowadays are so powerful that an emulator almost seems like it's running, that application is made for Linux. It just seems like, wow, I don't notice it's slowing, that it's an emulator. In the old days, emulators were much slower, and people just didn't have the patience to use an emulator. Well, as far as I know, they've improved a lot. But anyway, let me get back down to what I wanted to go through, because this is what you need to understand, because we're really trying to help you understand that your blind faith in the party and the fact that we're trying to get a petition done by the third parties, trying to get the Constitution Party, the Libertarian Party, the Independent American Party, any third party that is saying, hey, many of the parties are opposition controlled. In other words, the Green Party and all of those progressive parties, they will not challenge the two-party system. They won't. But I think on the liberty side, I think the libertarians may. I think that the Constitution Party may actually be willing to challenge the party system. So we have to prove to you how the two parties have literally stepped aside to let the other ones do the dirty work. And then they come back, and then our side gets in, or their side gets in, and then they reconfigure it to doing what needs to be done for the globalist. I mean, it's like, well, let me go through this. The federal assistance to the railroad in 1831 was the real beginning, you know, because at this point in time, the development of the railroad and the steam engine and everything else in the 1820s, that became really hot in Europe. And it was, you know, it was coming to America. And we go, wow, you know, we want to do this. This would be great but we need to have these tracks. There's this need to do this. And you know, this goes down the concept of whether corporations should do this or whether government should have done the railroad. If you ask me, I believe the railroad should have been done by government, by your state government. Let the states and then states create the interconnections and so forth. But see, here's the problem. The problem with the Constitution, dare I say, the problem keeps the states from creating a treaty and doing this. Now, as Madison said, the federal government doesn't have the power in that Constitution that you have to amend it. So when they started looking at rail lines as a means of moving commerce and as a mechanism of infrastructure, why didn't they amend the Constitution at that point instead of violating it? I honestly believe that every state in the Union would have given them the amendment to do it right. I believe it was the divine hand of providence that just convinced everybody to allow the Constitution to be violated. Because I believe had we actually delegated to the federal government, there would have been other things such as health care that we're going to be disclosing to you. And actually, if you want to see the real nightmare, because I'm only scratching the surface here. You want to see the nightmare of the timelines of how government has been insidiously assuming powers. Go through our petitions. Go through our Department of Interior petition. Go through our Department of Commerce petition. Go through, you know, what's the other one? The Department of Energy. These things have timelines. Even the medical freedom one has a timeline, but it's really focused on Obamacare. We kind of lay a little bit of history out. What we're doing right now is we're working on a petition for the Health and Human Services. Why? Because you got to understand, Health and Human Services isn't just medical freedom. It's welfare, right? It's food stamps. It is social engineering. So it's much bigger than anything else, than just Obamacare. I mean, Obamacare is this huge grab of control over our medical lives and so forth. But bottom line, we really are going to be covering the history in this next petition of the Health and Human Services that we didn't do in the medical freedom one. Because medical freedom, we really dove into the argument that the Supreme Court had no jurisdiction over this, that Roberts, his decision was all unconstitutional. But bottom line, let me get back to the two parties. You know, what we're doing, if I'm hoping this is starting to make sense, that what we're doing in using these petitions in creating this comprehensive list of theses. And I'm saying that because that's what Martin Luther did. Martin Luther had a comprehensive list of 95 theses. You know, there may have been more, whether it was complete, who knows? But he came up with 95 and said, this is enough to scare you. You know, they're actually doing things that the Catholic Church was doing things that was wrong. And they shined the light on this to where enough people, the entire Germanic state, said, wow, this is wrong. We need to sever our ties with the Catholic Church because they refuse to fix these things. And that should scare you. They refuse to fix these things. And so what they did was they created the Reformation of Christianity. And even Martin Luther, claimed that he wasn't creating the everlasting gospel that the Bible talks about. He was just trying to get Christianity closer, just closer to the scriptures, so that the church was doing those things. And so they moved closer. But look at how far most Christian churches have moved away from the scriptures. And as a matter of fact, we have so many different scriptures today. Again, this isn't your Sunday school. This isn't your tech school program. So I've dove down a few different rat holes, and I need to really focus. So the railroad assistance plan in 1831 was throwing federal money in. And down the road, we're going to find that the railroad actually received land grants from the federal government. The federal government had no authority to do that. Show me where that's enumerated. The only enumerations for the federal government to possess land for any purpose other than territories, to possess a territory to make it a state, and then creating a swath of 100 miles or whatever they did in some of these, you know, occasions where they created these land grants to the railroads. And then when the states came in, they said, oh, you can't touch that land. Are you kidding me? The federal government never had the authority to do that. That's how crazy this all started, even well before the Organic Act. They started doing things and assuming powers, which is why it just became the easy thing to just run us off the cliff with the Organic Act of 1871. We've never covered the Organic Act. That's just because we've just never taken that time to go through content. This may be the last year. We're going to have to hit this. We're going to have to hit this at breakneck speed. So this year, what we're going to cover in the ratification debates are only those things and those topics that we didn't really cover last year. So in other words, what you're seeing us cover in the ratification debates this year will be amendments or additions to last year's. You're going to still need to listen to last year's discussions with Paul and I, because I don't know how much longer they're going to tolerate this voice behind this microphone. And I don't know how much longer, you know, I'm going to have the time to be behind this microphone. I'm telling you, folks, my time is getting pulled away from me more and more and more because I love you. And I mean this. I love liberty, and I'm doing everything that I can. And there's no greater gift that we can give humanity than liberty. This is for you. This is for you, America. This is for you, the world. When these men created this Constitution and basically forwarded it to Continental Congress, they weren't just coming up with a great new government. They were coming forward with God's plan of global governance. This was God's globalism, allowing everybody to be free. Now look at how evil it's become. You either allow these evil things, or we're going to kill you. We're going to destroy you. We'll take your business. I know people that have literally been attacked. Doctors that have lost their practices because they dare stand up against pharmaceutical companies. And they didn't see it coming. They really thought that, you know, justice was in their corner. And there are many people that have been victimized. And it's incredible. I'm here to tell you, it's just incredible that we don't know these stories or hear these stories. I'd love to tell you about the story about a doctor, how Big Pharma, actually, maybe we'll do that. But we need to cover a lot of content this year. This content becomes a permanent record that, you know, they say once it's on the internet, it's always there. Well, if you go to Reclaiming the Republic, that's where you're going to get this content. And hopefully we'll be able to, you know, I'm surprised that I haven't been deplatformed. In many ways, I'm surprised I have not been deplatformed. If you understand what we're doing and the level of information we've given you to this point, I am just absolutely surprised I haven't been attacked with salacious and, you know, absolutely far-fetched accusations and so forth. So, and I've warned you. I mean, I'm not a perfect man, and I've tried to, you know, disclose, but, you know, I'm not here to bare my soul to you. I'm here to tell you that none of us are capable of judging anyone. You know, that we've all need to repent, and we all continue to make mistakes. We all have our crosses to bear, but he bore the ultimate cross for all of us. He paid that price. Anyway, so in, let me see here, the standardized electoral college process going from a split state between the appointed and elected. We went through that, and by 1832, all states had basically standardized the electoral college process. This was a cooperation between these parties that were constantly in flux, because at this point in time, the Republicans, I think, were the Whigs. It doesn't matter what they were converting to, but there was this concession, this cooperation. In other words, this compromise in how the states actually allowed the people in 1832, except for South Carolina, the state legislature still appointed the electors. And then in 1856, mid-1800s, I'm pretty sure it was 1856, when the Electoral College was taken control of by the parties. In other words, the Republican and Democratic parties basically had their primary. And I believe if you go back and look at it, I've got to pull it up now, but I believe if you go back and look at it, and it, you'll find this in my article, Why Counties Matter Most. And oh, by the way, that article is up. So I'm just here to tell you that Why Counties Matter Most, that article is out there for you to actually get, and it is on the Constitutional Perspectives page. You can download the PDF and read it. It is 72 pages, because I'm looking at it. And if you go to Appendix A, and you go to the very end of Appendix A, that'll show you what they were actually doing when they went to the primaries. And in 1852, each elector was chosen by voters statewide. In other words, the president was not on the ballot. In 1856 is when you actually voted for the president in a primary. They down-selected all of the candidates so that you would have a Republican president and vice president and a Democrat president and vice president. So they would down select something that the Constitution didn't allow. The state legislators allowed it and Congress allowed it. They allowed us to no longer follow the Electoral College process. That happened in 1856. So in other words, the parties in the background were trying to figure out how we could actually have better control. And they wanted to make sure that they, you know, it didn't go the wrong way. Well, what happened in 1860? A Northerner was elected as president and a Southerner was elected as the vice president by the electors to actually try to create this harmony between the North, you know, the abolition states and the slave states. Now, what ended up happening was that was a signal, because the Southern states, they felt that Lincoln was going to come after them for slavery. And he didn't. He didn't come after them for slavery. But they seceded from the Union over slavery. So we're going to kind of try to go through those documents, those secession letters that came from, I believe, Georgia was one, and the Carolinas, and I think maybe Texas. There are four of them on the Avalon site. You might be able to find the secession letters from all of the other states, but Avalon only has those. So we will go through those. But the fact of the matter is that the parties compromised and stopped following the constitutional process of the Electoral College in choosing the president. Okay, so the next item that we have to share with you is the, before we share the next item, just want to point out that in 1836 is when Madison died. I think I might have mentioned this last time. So when Madison died, the father of the Constitution was no longer alive, and I think he was pretty impotent by 1835. 1836, when he passed away, June 28th, I think that was the signal that they could start doing things. They could start going beyond the Constitution and assuming powers without somebody saying, hey, they can't do that. Because when those of us who understand pass away, and that knowledge isn't passed on because nobody thinks it's important. I mean, look at the knowledge that your great-great-grandfather had. Your great-great-grandfather, almost all of our great-great-grandfathers in America knew how to build homes, how to build furniture, had to know how to do lots of things. They may not have known electricity. They may not have known plumbing, but they knew the fundamentals of building a home. They knew the fundamentals, most of them. If not, then it was shared with, you know, advanced knowledge or technology of building better furniture and those types of things, because the quality of living was improving, you know, every decade. You know, as we see today, how things have gotten, you know, technologies and everything, right? So your grandfather knew how to grow your own food, how to kill your food. They knew how to live. They knew the fundamentals of living. As we've slowly progressed into a more advanced society, we became more symbiotic. In other words, we had this mutual dependency on those to fix our cars, those who made our plumbing, you know, work, and our sewage system work, our electrical work. We had this symbiotic society because we needed subject matter experts to deal with this newer technology as it was being developed, so that we would have even a better quality of life. We have gotten an advance to a point where we started actually deviating, where people wanted to control that quality of life, but they wanted to invoke very evil things with it. And that's where we are today. This is why, you know, I keep on going, you know, in and out of character of what I want to cover, you know, of the content character and, you know, not the conspiracy theorist, but the pragmatist telling you, hey, this is bad. This is really bad. I can't tell. I mean, I may giggle, but it is that sobering and that serious. Here's a question. How many people, you know, and this is a rhetorical question, how many people have started to have more dreams that you actually remember more of your dreams? The Bible tells us that the Spirit will be poured out, that will there be, you know, the sons and daughters will dream dreams. And this is a sign. Are you beginning to experience dreams, or have you been experiencing them quite a bit? Because it seems like it's getting more prevalent. At least in my life it has. Anyway, so Madison died in 1836. The federal court, as I kind of talked about, they adopted these rules in 1836, and I may have covered this already, but I want to build this up so that next Friday I'm going to dive into and kind of hopefully close up how the two parties kind of colluded and compromised away our liberties and how we got to this point. So 1837, the courts adopted these rules, and they actually instituted civil law. By doing this, by allowing case law precedents and those types of things, they went away from constitutional law, or I should say law based on the Constitution. They allowed themselves to be able to bend the law, because the Constitution clearly states that only the parties can determine what is constitutional and what is not. And they convinced us, this bar system and everything else, convinced us that they could do this, that they could actually watch us. We're going to soak this log. We're going to soak this wood. And we're going to, you know, look at pipes, plastic pipes. We're going to heat the plastic in this, and we're going to bend it so that it takes this form of a, you know, this loop or whatever they want to bend it into, a U-turn, and send it in the different direction. For our own benefit. They're doing this to benefit them so that they are laying these like a pathway of stones. They're laying these stones down so that they are moving in the direction they want to go. So as we look, the federal government then in 1849 took and seized and started actually implying that they controlled all land in the states when they started establishing states As new states came into the Union, the Department of Interior was involved in the enabling acts and making sure that they possessed this magical thing called federal lands. Federal lands took on a whole new meaning in 1849, or actually before 1849, because this is the land that the federal government claimed stake in. Unconstitutionally, by the way, they had no authority to do this, but that's what they started doing. And the states and the territories let them do it. And because it was for good purposes, folks, they were going to do some good things. Just like the railroad, that was going to be for good purposes. Nobody knew how... Excuse me. So, if you really look at how everything laid out, the only person that could have known how all of this was going to actually come to a head into a very evil government, even the Illuminati didn't understand what they were doing. They had no clue. They didn't understand big tech. They just knew that things were going to come together, it was going to boil together. So they knew what they were doing and doing these very specific things, such as this Department of Interior and so forth. They knew that it was, you know, moving them in the direction that they needed to go. But for the most part, it seemed like it's just a good thing. It may not be, we may not have the full constitutionality behind it, but it's a good thing. So just let us do it. And we've come to a point where I actually hear constitutional professors say, well, they've been doing this for over a century. What's the matter with it? Even Hillsdale College doesn't challenge this. Folks, that ought to be a huge red flag. That ought to be a huge red flag of how far we've gone. And how many people, how many conservatives, I want to say constitutionalists, but how many quote-unquote conservatives that listen to this show on a regular basis, how many people have looked at Hillsdale College as the source of the Constitution in understanding it? Way too many people rely on what they tell you. They're Imprimis. As a matter of fact, there's a conservative entertainer that used to plug the Imprimis all the time. And I pick the Imprimis up. I get it. I still get it. And I read it and I go, this is just a waste of my time. This guy doesn't understand the Constitution, or he wouldn't be saying this stuff. And that's the whole thing. Now, when we look at some of these people that actually paved the way, like Doctor or Professor Kurt Lash, who's a constitutional lawyer, that guy really broke some barriers in challenging the 14th Amendment. I'd love to have that man on my show. We've sent off a letter. He's just not responsive. And so I don't know if, you know, he used this thesis, and if you want it, I'll post it or I'll send it to you and I could look it up. But he wrote this 3-part thesis, you know, on the Privileges and Immunities Clause of the 14th Amendment. And it's just absolutely a work of art, folks. It is absolutely a work of art. And so in this thesis, he proves, you know, that the privileges and immunities in the Constitution is applied to the states. And you've been told otherwise. Oh, that would mean that the federal government has control. No, it doesn't have control of everything. And it doesn't allow your state to have control of everything either. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. And we'll pick up on 1852 with the primaries again. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.